Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
For more than two decades, the mystery surrounding the strange events taking place in and around Greystone Mansion have been suppressed, ignored, and disbelieved. Until now. The historic Greystone Estate sits atop 18.3 acres in the beautiful city of Beverly Hills. While it may offer spectacular panoramic views and amazing history, many visitors have experienced something unexpected. Paranormal activity. The notorious murder-suicide of Ned Doney and his secretary Hugh Plunkett are not the only deaths linked to this home. And it appears that once the Doney family moved out in 1955, otherwise unwelcome visitors moved in. Cleet Keith, our guest today, worked from an office on the Greystone Estate for over two decades. And his book, Ghosts of Greystone, Beverly Hills, is a remarkable collection of over 230 Beverly Hill ghost stories and a landmark expose of eyewitness accounts detailing supernatural activity associated with this extraordinary location. That's next on Darkness Radio. Welcome to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. Today, the ghosts of Greystone, our guest, Cleet Keith. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Cleet.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here to share this story. You know, I heard about Greystone while I was working for the Ghost Adventures TV series as a location scout and reached out numerous times to try to get permission to film there and tell its story, but they were reticent. So I was surprised when I saw a book coming out about it from somebody who worked there and was excited to finally get a chance to look behind the veil and find out more about this story. Was this something that they were open to finally allowing, or did you just feel the story was too big to be contained anymore?
That's pretty much it. I'm surprised too, by the way. I didn't realize that I was going to do something like this. I'd been there, like you said, Dave, for 22 years. And at the end, I thought, what should I do? I think I'll just write down all the stories that I have from all these years, which were quite a few. But as I started writing them down, then I went to talk to some of the people just to make sure the details were correct. And they would say, well, if you're going to talk to me, then you better talk to such and such. And I went, oh, okay. So I went to this other person, and it kept going and going and going. But I never told the city that I was going to do that. We had another ghost group call, and I happened to be in my office one day, and they turned it over to me and said, hey, you know, if they want to come in and shoot. And I went, okay. I talked to them a little bit, and I said, let me see what I can do and find out for you. I knew it was going to be no. And talked to the higher-ups, and they said, absolutely not, especially while one of the remaining immediate members of the family were still alive. So I think it was Patrick and Tim, the two youngest sons, who at that time were probably in their 70s, almost in the 80s, early 80s, and the city didn't want anything to do with ghosts or murders while they were still alive.
Understandable. Now, obviously, you know, the city wants to preserve some of these historic sites. They want to keep them, you know, the grandeur, the history, the stories, and people are really drawn to that area and what took place there. And then when you add to it a whole nother layer of the supernatural, I think they missed out on an opportunity to sell the history of this location and weave it through the narrative of ghost stories. Well, do you think that now that the family members have passed on, Cleet, that they might be more willing to explore those aspects?
No. And the reason being is they still do weddings and events and, like, you know, I don't think they want somebody doing a PowerPoint presentation and then somebody takes that presentation over, you know, so right. They're concerned about and they do tours and stuff like that. They're concerned about it being known as a haunted place. Although, Dave, as you know, it already is.
Right.
So it's like, oh, I don't know what the big secret is. That's why I thought, you know, I'm going to write this book. If they try to shut me down, I'll just say, look, anybody could write this book. Anybody could show up at Greystone, just the public, and say, you know what, I'm going to write a story about this mansion. It's right. A public facility. So for me, I just thought if I lay low, start taking names and finding out who's got all these great stories. And boy, it took off. I had no clue. There was one person that I brought in there had 18 stories of her time being there for, I think it was 4 years as a ranger. So, you know, they all had these stories, and yet the city was still reticent on even discussing it. When I first started working there, my initial directive was do not mention the ghost. If anybody asks you, you go, well, I'm not really sure what that's about, but look over here. Isn't that beautiful? That's how it was supposed to be. Mm. So, Dave, if I may, tell me, you were a location scout, mm-hmm. but was it for a paranormal show or was it a
Oh, it was. The TV show Ghost Adventures. Yeah, and we'd reached out and were politely declined on two or three occasions.
It's probably me, by the way.
It might be. I'd have to, you know, I do have my emails that I kept from that time, hoping that the guy that kept telling me no would eventually leave and I'd get somebody better. But it might have been you, Cleet.
It could be. Sometimes what they would do is if I wasn't in my office, they would move it up the chain and give it to the head of community services, and they'd be the ones to say, no, absolutely not, because I eventually, wanting to find out the truth about everything, I got a hold of Dead Files and just sent them a letter or email and said, look, I'm not going to tell you the location. I don't want to, it's in Beverly Hills, but I'm not going to tell you where this place is. And what I'd like to do is to see if you guys would be interested in coming to a haunted location in Beverly Hills to do a show. And about a month later, I got a call and said, Cleet, hi, my name is such and such. And so I did read your email. And is the location, I said, look, I'm not going to tell you. She goes, is the location Greystone? I said, yes.
Because, you really stuck to your guns there, Cleet. Look, I'm not going to tell you. Is it Greystone? Yes. I like that.
Well, because the way she said it to me, it was almost like, come on, is it Greystone? And I just said, yeah, because I thought the best way I can get them in there is if I'm honest with them and say, yeah, it is. Maybe that would excite them. And she said, I'm going to talk to my producers. I'll get back to you. I said, great. And she got back to me and said, yes, we're interested. I said, great. Now let me talk to my higher ups. And they said, absolutely not. Oh, man. Okay. Wow. So they shut it down. Yeah. And so it's I didn't know if you were working as a location scout, if you were working on another show or something, and then so Kate showed up at Greystone and went, God, this place might be something that the Ghost Adventures might like.
Well, that's what we were working on, hoping that we would be able to get Ghost Adventures in there at some point. But again, the deflection shield was running at full force at that point. Well, let's start to dig in. Obviously, it's always interesting to me. Like you said, you know, oh, we don't want to talk about the paranormal. Well, anybody that goes online can look up haunted spots in California, and there's pages upon pages about Greystone. So it's no big secret, but it's, you know, it's an interesting aspect to our history and where we've been and why these hauntings continue to occur. So let's take us back in time, if you will, Cleet, and introduce us to Greystone and the inhabitants, living and dead, if you would.
Okay, so at the very beginning, before it was even built, there was a man, Edward Lawrence Doheny, who lived in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. He came out to California to find gold. didn't find gold, but saw a guy pulling a wagon in downtown, and it was filled with this black stuff in it. And he went up to him and said, "What is that?" And he said, "Brea." And he and then started to say, "It's oil that seeped through the land that hardens, and they're selling it as fuel." And he said, "Really?" And so then he bought a small little plot of land with he and his friend Charles Canfield, and they started. This is crazy, Dave. Listen to this. They started digging with a pick and shovel on this plot of land. It's near Alvarado and Wilshire out in downtown LA here, and they dug down 155 feet with a pick and a shovel. That's crazy. That's 15 stories down.
Jeez, and, that's commitment to a job.
Well, listen to the rest of the commitment. They went and they cut down a eucalyptus tree that's an extremely strong tree and as straight as it could be. And at the very end, they carved in what was like a drill bit head. And they lowered it down in there and they kept turning. I'm guessing with mules turning the drill bit, in essence. And they got down 450 feet. I don't even know how that's possible, but this is documented.
Right.
450 feet, and they hit oil. The first time they brought out 7 barrels. Then they brought out, I think it was 25 barrels the next day. And then pretty soon they were making money enough to where they could go down to Mexico and basically, to be honest, fleece the Mexicans of their land because they saw oil seeping up through the land and bought this whole area. And they hit a 600-foot geyser on that land. And he became a billionaire overnight when a penny meant something. And then it became the Rockefellers and the Doheny's. He came back up here. He had purchased land downtown L.A. Near USC where he had his homes. More than one, and bought 450 acres, which turned out to be Beverly Hills, and then gave his son a 12.58 acreage parcel of land so that he could build his new home. They started the construction of Greystone on February 15th, 1927, and this is a 46,000 square foot home, Dave. You've seen it, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, 46,000 square feet, 55 rooms, 67 altogether, meaning there are walk-in closets as well. And they started construction February 15th. The family, which is Ned, his wife Lucy, his daughter Lucy, and 4 boys, were able to move in to that mansion on in September of 1928. So within a year... That's how many people were working on this property, by the way. Gordon Kaufman, who built the Los Angeles Times building and Hoover Dam, was part of this process. And he said, give them everything. You know, that's what they wanted. And they brought all the people in. They did it so quickly. And the mansion itself is poured cement. Kaufman was a cement guy, right? Hoover Dam, all that. He poured cement, and it's like a fortress. It's poured cement with rebar. The outside of it is Indiana limestone. And as we know, limestone is a conductor of energy, right?
And that's what we believe in the paranormal field, especially, sure.
You bet. So this whole house is faced with Indiana limestone and then Welsh slate on the top, really thick, like 3 to 4 inches thick slate on the top on the roof. And that family moved in September of 1928, and February 16th of 29, right around 4 months later, Ned was lying dead in his home.
Wow. So, that's quite the turnaround. Now, was there any tragedies associated with the actual building of this property?
I tried to look that up. I couldn't find anything. And part of the difficulty about doing research on this home, if it were somebody's home, so just a regular fella who had a lot of money, who owned, you know, a hardware store or something like that, you could get all those documents. You could find it out. But when you get a family that was so high profile as the Doheny's, everything was kept under lock and key. So if somebody passed, nobody would know about it. It was swept under the rug. People were paid under the rug. People were paid off. And that is the same thing that goes on with most everybody who died at that location, and there are a lot, and especially Ned, the father, who was the husband to Lucy, Ned and his secretary, Hugh Plunkett, it was a murder-suicide in that house, and within 24 hours, it was swept under the rug, and the police said, it's done, it's over, it was a murder-suicide, which I'm still a little leery about how that happened. I've done digging, man, and a friend of mine is Clark Fogg, who is the forensic head of the forensics there in Beverly Hills for 32 years. He and I have become very good friends, and his stories, boy, I got to get you on the radio with him, man. Good Lord. He was the one who showed up at the Menendez killings and all that stuff.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Dave, we'll talk about that later. Those stories are ridiculous. Okay. But he allowed me to have access to all the files and everything. And the crazy thing is there's nothing in the files that we could find. So if I looked up, because I know there's a little girl in that house, she's been seen many times, hiding, running, playing. And we went to downtown L.A. to the where all the records are kept for everything, and went back through all the books and could find nothing about the death of a small little girl at that property. And it's probably because she did die there. And it was kept quiet. The family was probably paid off, and nothing ever happened. So that's part and parcel for everybody that had passed, except one guy in 2003. So that wasn't that long. In 2003, I was there that day. One guy showed up at the park and sat at the Willow Pond and shot half his head off. That was in the papers. But even that was kind of quiet, so...
Well, you talk to me about Ned and Hugh, this murder-suicide. Obviously, they've suppressed a lot of the information, but why was it believed, you know, was it a disgruntled employee? Was there a love affair? What do you believe was going on?
Well, what they say, there are many different theories, and I'll give you some of the theories. One is that they did have a relationship. We don't know if that's true or not. That is yet to be determined. It sounds like they did. A friend of mine was at a hospital out here not too long ago, and there was a nun there that actually knew some people that knew the Doheny's, and she said that they did have a relationship, Ned and Hugh. That was her determination. But regardless, I'm not sure that really had anything to do with it. It could have. But what they think really took place was the Teapot Dome scandal. And I'm not going to go into a whole history thing for that and take up the time for that. But what I will say is it was about oil. Mr. You know, Edward L. Doheny and all the money in oil. What he did was Albert Fall, who was the Secretary of the Interior back then during the Harding administration, he was friends with Edward, also friends with several other guys who were oil barons. And instead of doing a bidding process, he basically gave them the rights to these specific lands. And Teapot Dome is an oil reserve. This one guy got that. Edward ended up getting the Elks Hill in California and another one. And so from getting that, Edward, he sent Ned and Hugh to New York to take out $100,000 and put it in a satchel and deliver it to Albert Fall. Now, $100,000 back then, it's a lot now, but back then was like millions. So Albert Fall received the money and it was found out. So they did a trial. Albert Fall was convicted for having taken the bribe. He said it was a loan, and he went to prison. Now they wanted to go after Edward Sr. His son, his name is Ned, but it was really Edward as well, but they called him Ned, just so we don't get those mixed up. So Sr., they wanted to go after him. So what they thought they would do is they would take Ned and Hugh, who delivered the money, into court and start pressing them. That was now all the pressure was on Ned and Hugh. And so the family, from what I have understood, the family was concerned that Hugh may spill the beans. So they were trying to get Hugh to go into a sanatorium at that time and say that he had trouble with his teeth, that he started using cocaine, which is what they did back then to dull the pain. and that he had to go into the sanatorium and couldn't be at the trial. They think that Hugh was extremely reticent to going into jail and or into the sanatorium because he didn't think he's going to get out, that he knew too much. And they think that night the pressure just came to a boiling point, and he showed up at the house, which is true. It was 11 or so at night, went inside and confronted Ned with his not wanting to go into sanatorium and not wanting to be involved, but he already was involved. And they had been drinking, screaming and yelling. A gun came out, and by the end of the night, they were both dead. Somebody shot somebody and then killed themselves. We don't know who shot whom because they both had bullet holes to the head. And those photos are in the book, and it's really kind of gruesome, but it's part of history.
Isn't that weird that, well, obviously there's, you know, each one has a bullet hole to the head because one murdered the other and then murdered themselves. But wouldn't the giveaway be who had the gun or was the gun closest to?
Well, they put the gun in Hugh's hand.
Oh.
And to make it look like he did it. Now, maybe he did, but here's the thing, Dave, the thing that's bothered me, and others say, oh, it's not a big deal. I mean, at the burial site for Ned, the Doheny burial site, Ned has this huge memorial. And if I kill you, I doubt your loved ones are going to want me near you, right? At the burial site. Hugh is maybe 30 yards away. So, and Ned wasn't given the proper Catholic burial. So did he commit a sin? Is that why he wasn't buried the normal way that the Catholics like to do their burials? And if so, why is Hugh, who murdered this man, so close to him at the site? Doesn't make sense to me. But there were a lot of different odd things that were found. There was a book that came out that was titled Me Detective by Leslie White. And he said he was there and he went through it all. And here's what took place. And there's no way that, you know, that Hugh had a cigarette in his right hand and the gun in the left. Well, he's right-handed. He wouldn't shoot, all this stuff. And then I find out from Clark Fogg, who's the forensic guy who looked into it, said, Clay, how this guy went about this investigation in his book is not correct. It's not true. I don't think he actually did the actual investigation. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to put anything in the book that I feel is maybe, you know, maybe it went down this way. I'm going to leave it up to everybody to try to figure out what they think happened. Bottom line is, at the end of that night, Hugh was lying in the hall dead, and Ned was in his room in his like smoking jacket, laying there dead as well.
Either way, it's a strange, strange story. Did other tragedies then begin to befall this family after this? Or again, is it another one of those things that's hard to tell because they were so guarded and protected?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I've always thought, and I kind of think about it a little bit, talk a little bit about it at the beginning of the book. And that is, like, was this land, it was Indian land at one point. Was there any ritual that was placed on that land back then? Then the Mexicans came in and it was their land. Was there any ritual placed on that land, that specific area, by the Mexicans? And then once they started coming in and building this home, and did that affect Ned and Hugh to do what they did? I don't know. I do know that there is a portal within the home. And how I know that is Peter James. You know Peter James?
Yeah, certainly. He was the resident medium aboard the Queen Mary for many years and a guest on our show before his passing.
Okay, awesome. Well, he showed up one day, and to Steve Clark is the name of the ranger who was there at the time, and Steve said, I'll bring you in. It was Peter James, another guy, and I guess several other people, and he said, you can come in, but you can't bring any cameras because the city will fire me, basically. So Peter James walked in and was looking around, and he looked up to this one area, this corner, and said, oh, are you aware you have a portal in here? And Steve's like, no. He goes, it's right there. He pointed to the corner of the room. Flash ahead to maybe 2007 or 8. I make a friendship with Chris Fleming. You know Chris?
Certainly do. Again, longtime friend of the show and one of our best friends. Yeah.
Great. Okay, so Chris and I became friends, and he showed up one day with another psychic woman and then two other guys. One was a producer, and I said, guys, you're welcome to come in, but no cameras, nothing. And I said, come on, Chris, I'll take you through. That day changed my thought process about the mansion. I'd been there probably 10 years already or 12 years, but this was during the day too. So Chris came in, and when he walked in, he looked up there and said, are you aware you have a portal? And he pointed right where Peter James said. And I said, that's what Peter James said. He goes, he was my mentor. I went, wow, man. No, that's it's. So my point is, did that portal open because of those murders? Dave, I have recordings and things of gunshots going off inside. I leave my recorder there at night when I recently retired. But when I was there, put my recorder in there hundreds and hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times. Gunshots going off in that house. I mean, real gunshots, it sounds like. So is there something in there within that portal that made these guys snap? I don't know. Is it part of what made two women servants kill themselves in the home? Another triangle that resulted in a triangle meaning two guys and a girl fighting, two guys fighting over the same girl, and she was killed. Emily, the little girl that's in that house, was that caused by the portal? I don't know. It's a very complex location. And I've always thought about, at one point, having the Ghost Adventures guys come in. But I wasn't sure, even if I was able to do that, I wasn't sure that anything would happen that night. Because it's really... it's not like you walk in, you go, oh my God, I'm feeling so. Some people right. do. I had that with several people walking in. They were grabbed, freaked out. I had to get them out of the house. Those things did happen, but I kept thinking, if they showed up for one night, I don't think anything would happen. I think they'd just lay low and let them walk out and say, well, that was a pretty poor location. So I'm not sure.
Now, talk to me about the deaths of the employees there. That took place, another triangle.
Yeah. So I'm going to see how to phrase this. There, once Ned passed, Mrs. Doheny, Lucy, married the financial advisor 2 years later. His name was Lee Batson. And so through... they're living there. They lived there until 1955. There were situations in which I'm trying to be very careful with this because I don't want any, you know, repercussions from this, but there were situations.
Throw in the words allegedly. I think allegedly.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. This is why I need you. Just follow me around when I go up there. Will you please?
You got it. You got okay. it.
Allegedly, there might have been situations where he, had relationships within the home, not just with his wife. Allegedly, those relationships resulted in pregnancies. And so Catholic household, Catholic maids, pregnancy out of wedlock, everything added up to a pressure where they said, that's it, we're done. One hung herself, which became our, when I was working, it became our break room, by the way. She hung herself in that room. And another woman, we had a lady show up one day, and Steve Clark was the ranger, show up, and she was an older woman saying, may I get inside the house and look around? Steve said, well, we really don't do tours now. But she goes, oh, because a friend of my mother's died in this house. And Steve said, really? What? Yes, she was a maid. She slit her wrist in the meat locker. And Steve went, oh my God, that's real. She goes, oh, honey, it's real. So there is a meat locker upstairs, and this poor maid went in there, and she killed herself in the meat locker because there's a drain, and so that all the blood would go down the drain and her friends wouldn't have to clean up after her. And it's a real story.
Wow.
So
that's
there's
crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And the little girl, we don't know, Dave. She's been seen. And in my 22 years there, I never saw her, but I had friends and people would show up just like if we had an event, they'd show up to bring flowers to put in the grand hall. And they'd walk out and you'd see their faces white. And we go, "You okay?" And he goes, "You got a little girl running in there. Are you aware of that?" "No. When did you see that?" "Just now. I just saw, she was, what is that?" Because he could see through her or what have you. So what happened to me one day is I was inside the house and a film crew was in there. And they're all huddled together. And this one woman in the film crew looked at me with these eyes like horrified. And I went, "Uh-oh, something happened to her." So I wanted to get out of there. So I started sneaking away. And she goes, "Excuse me." I go, "Yeah." And she goes, can I talk to you a minute?" I go, "Oh, sure, sure." So she walks away from the crew and says, "Is this place, you know?" And I go, no, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to lead anybody that way. I just say, "No, I don't know." She goes, is this place haunted?" And I said, "Why do you ask?" And then she went into her story saying ever since she was a little girl, she could see, hear, feel, sense spirits. And when she got to be 15 years old, she shut it down. She said, "But when I walked in here today and I'm standing with the crew, this little girl runs at me and she says, 'My name is Emily. It's Emily. My name is Emily.'" And she said, "I looked over at the crew. They're not responding to her." So she walked away around a wall and said, "Okay, your name's Emily. Don't do this to me. Please stay away from me. Don't do this to me." So she said, "My question is this place haunted?" And I said, "Yes." "Did a little girl die here?" And I said, "Yes." "Was her name Emily?" "We don't know. It's Emily." And what we tried to find out in all the records downtown was there an Emily that we were told she fell out the window of Lucy's second floor bedroom onto the terrace below and on her neck and died. But this little girl, not only has she been seen in the house, Dave, running around, but when I started doing the interviews for the book to find out all these other stories, people were turning me on. "Oh, you got to talk to Glenn." When I get a hold of Glenn, I said, "Did something happen to you?" He goes, "Dude, okay. I'm the head of the Catskills drama club for kids. It's camp." And he said, "I show up early one day. I go upstairs to the firehouse, to his office. And when you're upstairs at the firehouse, if you look across probably about 50, 60 feet, begins the recreation wing of the mansion. And there's a rooftop to that. So when you go up those stairs, you're now equal with that rooftop." So he comes out with his clipboard, starts to go down the stairs, glances back, and sees a little girl standing on the roof. And he said, "I'm going like, what is she? First of all, where are her parents? How did she get into the park? And why is she on the roof?" And he says, hey. And she climbs up on the balustrades on the end of the, and just slides right off down into the courtyard. And he flips, runs down, and he goes, "Cleet, I thought this little girl jumped off and died in the courtyard, and I'm freaking out." And I run in the courtyard and there's nobody there. And they got other people show up. Maybe she ran upstairs. Nobody's there. And then to top it off, Dave, there's another woman who worked for the kids camp. This is like a month or so later. And she has all the little kids. They're probably like five, six out on the platform out there coloring and painting. And she's inside the office and she hears these horrified screams, and she said she was a lifeguard and she knows what those screams are, and she ran out like what, and all the kids they become quiet and all of them just point to the rooftop, and she looks over and she goes what happened, and the one little kid said she climbed up on the railing and jumped. So she was seen again. So we don't know if she was showing people how she passed back in the day, or was she doing that just for fun, or did she actually die falling out Lucy's window in the second floor of the mansion?
That's crazy, especially that there are so many different views of this spirit. Yeah. No concept of who this is or why they're there. Now, you know, it is important to note, too, that in a lot of these cases, sometimes the employees, if they had live-in maids, might have been allowed to keep their children there. Mm-hmm. And if something tragically happened, again, it's just one of the maid's kids. It wasn't big news. And it probably would have been swept under the rug.
That's a good point, Dave. I never even thought of that. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah.
I'd be curious to see if near their graves, if you've got another employee who's dead, if near their graves, are there any Emilys that might be around there that would be a child? Just to, you know, it's an interesting thought just to, to kind of throw out there because, you know, again, they may have buried the child to help the maid or, you know, have been a part of it somehow. And maybe it was near them. Again, you never know where these stories come from and how they roll out. But that this spirit, this energy is so powerful and prevalent and so many people have seen her is pretty remarkable. And you brought up an interesting point with the portal. Did the portal beget the strange activity or did the activity open the portal? Did the scarring of the land from these murders and atrocities create this disturbance, this shakeup of time and space?
It's exactly what I was trying to go through in my head going, what came first, you know, the portal or the egg, you know?
Right.
But
let's do this. We need to take a quick break. Our guest is Cleet Keith, the book, The Ghosts of Greystone. We have a link for that book on today's program guide. You can get it from Amazon, or if you'd like a signed copy, we have the link for that as well. Ghostsofgreystone.com is the website to get a signed hardback edition of the book. Stay tuned. We've got more coming your way right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Remember, tonight we have a brand new live stream show. You'll be able to watch it on our Facebook page, our Darkness Radio YouTube page, Twitter as well. Go watch it tonight. It is 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, Cameron Pasha, our guest, as we talk about the djinn, this ancient race of spiritual beings that seem to even predate the Bible. We'll talk about these beings and what it's like to face the djinn, as our guest has some very interesting background in investigating these claims and working and dealing with exorcisms performed by his Sufi order in Africa. A lot of other stories to share. That's tonight. We'll also take your questions. It'll be a good old-fashioned creepy evening, so turn down the lights, tune in, and spend the time with us. Today on the show, we are discussing the ghosts of Greystone. Our guest is Cleet Keith, who lived and worked there, basically, although he didn't live there. When you work at a place for over 20 years, you certainly feel like it's a home away from home. Had experiences and has gathered the many experiences that others have shared in this notoriously haunted home. Stories that have been suppressed and hidden for far too long are finally available in this gorgeous book. We've got a link for the book on our website. So if you go to darknessradio.com and click on the store tab, you'll find our Amazon store there. Or you can get a signed copy of the book by going to ghostsofgreystone.com. That link is on today's program guide as well. All right, Cleet, let's continue digging. So we've been introduced to some of these ghosts and some of the stories that have taken place. How about the Ned Doheny and Hugh Plunkett? Are they ever seen there? How about the two employees that took their lives there? Have they been witnessed on site as well?
Okay, so far, Ned has been seen. And one of the bizarre things that happened was that a woman showed up and took some photos outside of the living room because she wanted to do that for her friend. And she didn't get a permit, which you're supposed to. And they were taking photos. And then one of the rangers showed up and said, excuse me, do you have a permit to do that? He shut everything down. The last photo that she had taken of her girlfriend, who was standing by the window, there is an image in that glass that looks like Ned. And I heard about it because that ranger called me and said, I just got this text from the woman who shot the photos and this and that, and she's flipping out. And I said, well, what's going on? She got a face in the window. Send it to me. I got to see it. Send it to me. So I look at it and I went, damn, that's for Ned. Because she said, who is that? She had no clue. And it looks like Ned Doheny. He was also seen. There was another woman who was a ranger who had so many things happen. And Dave, one of the crazy things is a lot of the people that are rangers that have been hired have the gift. It's not something, obviously, that the city searches out, or Dan Hernandez, who's the senior ranger there, that he searches out. Let me find somebody who's got the gift. It's some of these people, I don't know if they're drawn to the location or they just need a job, and you find out, oh, dear God, they can see or feel or hear things. So this woman, whose name is Luz, L-U-Z. She was a ranger in the 90s, and I was told to get a hold of her because she had some stories. Well, she's the one who had 18 stories. And what I did was I said, why don't you just meet me here up at Greystone, and I'll walk you inside, and you lead me. You take me where you feel things are happening. She finally said, okay, a lot of these people do not want to come back. are afraid to go back inside or refuse to even talk about it. I had that from a guy who was now a DA in a city out here near where I live, and he won't talk about it. And he was walking with one of the rangers who was shoved down the stairs and could have died, just flew. He was standing right next to her. She just flew down there, landed, got hurt, went to the police station, filed a report, and quit. And so I wanted to get him on in the book to talk about it. He wouldn't do it, would not talk to me. But I knew enough of the story that he had told Steve Clark, this other ranger, that Steve related to me, and I put it in the book. As far as Ned goes, Luz said that she was cleaning the windows one time in the dining room and another time the windows from the outside in what was called the card room. And she was wiping the windows and she looked through the windows and there's a guy standing there in a smoking jacket. And she said to me, Cleet, he was right there. And I said, well, tell me what he looked like. And she describes him. Now, okay, mustache in the hair. Okay. And she goes, who do you think that is? And I said, well, as far as the smoking jacket, I showed her the photo of the murder scene with Ned lying there. And she goes, and she just went white, just went, oh my God, that's the guy. That's who I saw. I said, okay, you're all right. You're okay. But she has the gift. So she's seen many things. And so Ned has been seen. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that this was cathartic for past and present employees to have an outlet to talk about this, knowing that these stories will be heard and not forgotten?
No question. And part of it was they're coming back. I would use that and say, hey, listen, let's talk about it. Let's get it out and you can, you know, revisit this and maybe it'll help you. Because there was a woman that had something really horrible that happened to her down in the basement and she did not want to come back. And when I finally got her back to Greystone, then it was a task to get her back down in the basement. And not that I'm a horrible human being, although some may say I am. But it was really like I wanted her to feel that situation again. And when I brought her down there, boy, did she feel it. It turns out she also has the gift. So, and then other situations with Steve Clark, who also had the gift, who was a senior ranger there. He had things happen to him constantly, and he wanted nothing to do with it. But because I think the spirits could see the aura around him that he could communicate, they were constantly trying to get his attention.
It's kind of sad, isn't it, that the hungry ghosts there want to be heard, that there's a story to be told. What do you think it is?
Well, you know, you saying that is almost exactly what Chris Fleming said. Later on, we talked about it. He goes, God, it's kind of sad. There are these people like, you know, wanting so much for their stories to be told. And I do feel that. I feel like I had a moment where I went into the break room where the woman hung herself. And I was by myself in the morning. I had my phone. I put it on record. And I just said, why are you still here? Is it because of what you did in this life and you're afraid to find out what's going to happen to you when you pass over? Is that why? Click, played it back. And I have it. Is that why? Yes. So whatever was they did in this life, I think once they passed, they went, I don't want to take that next step. I don't know what's there for me. So if I just stay within this home that I know, I'll be safe. So that's what bothers me, because I would love to get somebody who's really, that's like I was talking about Cindy Kaza. Is that how you pronounce it? Kaza?
Cindy Kaza. Yeah.
Kaza. Yeah. That she could feel and maybe even send some people on, some spirits on if she wanted to. I don't know how to do that. And I'm not going to try. But there may be spirits that are trapped there for eternity. And it's like you said, it's to me, it's horribly sad, because I mean, I'm guessing they're not evil, evil spirits. I mean, there is one in there that's really bad, but I think they're just afraid to move forward with what they did in this life.
Well, let's talk about the darker spirit. What type of stories surround that?
Well, when I brought Chris Fleming in, that changed me as far as my feelings toward the home, thinking you're safe during the day, you're not, has nothing to do with, I mean, I think at nighttime, the spirits do come out more, maybe because of the atmosphere, what have you, but they're there during the day. And I know they are. And I've done tours there where people have been grabbed, have been touched. There was the spirit that Chris Fleming said at one point, I have a recording, Dave, that's like maybe, I think it's close to 8 minutes long, that I just happened to leave my recorder in that night. And it has, the alarm was broken, so it kept going beep-oop, beep-oop, which drove us crazy. So I eventually cut the cord just so I could get good recordings, which the city still doesn't know.
They do now.
Thank you so much. I'll take that out with you. How dare you? So there's the alarm going off. There was an owl outside that you could hear, helicopters going around, but through it all, you start to hear a little girl go, and it gathers energy. And so by the time he's going, whatever this spirit is screaming. I played that for Chris, and he was just staring at me. He goes like, I can't believe you got this. I go, hey, I just put the recorder. It happened to be the right night. He goes, that is unbelievable. And by the time we finished our tour, he said, that spirit on the recorder, yeah, that's the one that's up in the attic, and that's the one that scared your friend down in the basement. He goes from the attic to the basement. He doesn't live here the whole time. He comes in through the portal, but that's where he goes. And he called it that day, he called it a demon, which didn't help. I mean, I have to work there. He leaves, and I'm going.
Right, exactly.
a demon? What do you mean by that? That was kind of horrifying. But so that spirit is there. How it got in there? Could it be from the murders or the? I don't know. There have been sightings, quite a few sightings, of dark shadows that with red eyes. That's evil, as far as I'm concerned. And the woman that, this poor cleaning lady, who happens to have the gift, by the way, oddly enough, her friend didn't. Her friend would just sit in the car and pray 20 minutes before she went in the house. And this woman that had the gift, she would show up and enter the park. And she said at one point she entered the park, and up on the hill on this grassy knoll that's right as you enter, she said there's this huge black, dark black shadow staring at her. And she said the chills went right through her, and she knows what she's dealt with spirits before, with demons before, actually. So she constantly had to deal with that up there. There was a demon that was at the other gate that she came in, and she told her friend who was with her to clean, I'm going to get out of the truck. I'm going to open up the gate. If something happens, I want you to back out and go get help. And her friends go like, what are you talking about? Just do what I tell you. I'm going to open the gate and back out if I tell you to. She goes, all right. It scared the heck out of that one gal. And she left. She got out. It was there watching her the whole time. She opened the gate. She got the truck in, closed it, and zipped up to the mansion. And she said when she went back down to leave, there it was waiting for her. So there are evil spirits on that land and inside that mansion. So it can be frightening. Dave, I never had anything touch me or contact me. In fact, when Chris Fleming was there, he brought out the spirit box and he said, well, Cleet's been here 20 years. He's a friendly guy. You must know Cleet. And they said my name three times, which is a weird name. So it's like, you know, Cleet. And he goes, you heard that, right? I go, yeah, man, that's crazy. So they were aware of me. Is that why I wasn't touched or all that stuff? I don't know. But they're there.
The spirits, you know, that everybody's encountering, is this something that happens on a, you know, at least once a week? Is it multiple times a day? How often would you say that people are actually coming into contact with them?
Well, you know, COVID changed everything, right? So everything shut down, especially last year at the beginning of COVID. The mansion was just closed. It was like nobody went in because nobody was working at Greystone. It was myself and a couple of the other rangers were there just to make sure everything was cool and keeping people out. But at that time, we also took advantage of the fact that there's a theater. The recreation wing has the theater. It was actually like it was really a play theater for the kids. It was a beautiful theater in its day. And then when AFI came in, the American Film Institute, they came in and they were there for like 12 years, I think it was. And so they turned it into a screening room and all that stuff. But it was dilapidated and just really, you know, dry rot and all that stuff inside. So the city wanted to put money into it and bring it back to its glory. And so that being said, crews had to go in and tear stuff out. And spirits don't like that. And then rebuild, spirits don't like that. And I kept saying to my buddy Dan, I said, let's see how long before somebody comes running out or somebody says, is there something going on in there? And it, literally, it was like within the first week, things started happening. They weren't happy. And there was a time where one of the other rangers, a woman, was closing up at night, and they had gutted the theater, and she was locking all the doors, and she said that she walked up near the theater, and she said, I heard a crash inside that theater that you only hear in movies. It was like the ceiling fell in. She called me. She goes, dude, what are they working on? Could this? I'm going to go check the ceiling. I said, okay. She went up on the top of the roof where the little girl jumped off. And she said, the ceiling's fine. I said, okay, let it go. Just let it go. And she said, I'll talk to this guy, Christian, in the morning. When he comes in, I'll try to find out, one of the crew guys, what's ruined down there. If the crew shows up, everything's fine. And so I don't know. That's another thing I'd like to talk to you about, Dave, and that is I'm not really sure why. And maybe you can answer this. I'm not sure why. If I leave my recorder in that mansion and nobody's in there, everybody's gone, it's overnight, things are moving, the wood is being smacked, hammered. Sometimes your voice is off in the distance, gunshots. Why are they doing this? I don't understand. If nobody's there to scare anybody or try to get their attention, what do you think the point of that would be?
Well, you're assuming again that they're doing it for you or for somebody. And that may not be the case at all. It very well could just be that what you're dealing with is hearing through the veil of time, the work that's been done there throughout history. And it just happens. It's like that recorder is sitting in a place that's recording off a magnetic frequency that happens to be broadcasting at that same level. So you're picking up what it sounded like when there were workers there doing these things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the old saying, when a tree falls in the woods and there's nobody here to listen, does it make a sound? Right. Well, obviously it does, right? We know that occurs. So the reflections of the past or possibly even the future renovations may be playing, and you're picking that stuff up all the time. You may be picking up multiple layers of when somebody was working there or there was a party held there or a fight being held. So that's why you may hear these different, you know, things that are going on all simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. It's very bizarre, because I will say that if you brought in a crew like Ghost Adventures, that they may not get anything for the whole night. But I can also say that every time I left my recorder in that house, which was hundreds of times, there was never one night I didn't hear something. And usually it was like a lot of things, but there would always be it was never a quiet night. I never had one quiet night where you didn't hear anything. Suddenly you hear a bang. I go, what was that? And like I say, gunshots, I think, is a residual from that evening when they shot each other. So that's kind of freaky. That's really, and these are clear. These are like class A,
right?
Echoey. They echo. Mm. It's pretty astounding.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel threatened there, or feel that there was a problem or concerns?
Well, I don't have the gift. So like, if I walk in there, and I went in there by myself one night with a camera, and I was scared because I think I freaked myself out more than anything. Nothing was going on. I'm just going like, oh my God, I'm here alone. You know, they're going to kill me. I know that they're there every night. In fact, I've done I never felt like I was being attacked. That never happened to me, whether I'm protected or what have you. My buddy Steve and I used to go down, you know, park's closed, everybody's gone, and we're in there at like midnight, and we're going down into the basement, sitting in the dark with our recorders. He's on the far end of the basement, I'm on the other far end of the basement, and we just sit there quietly, and we have our recorders going. And I never felt like I was being attacked. You're scared just because of the history of that mansion, knowing what has taken place and what could take place, I think is what raises the level of fear. And but I have had times where I brought this one girl in from Norway. She and her friend came from Norway, and on their bucket list was to go into Greystone. So it happened to be like 106 that day, one of the hottest days a couple of years ago out here. And they walked from a mall, the Beverly Center, a long walk, and they were like dripping. I said, just sit for a minute. They sat in the air conditioning. I said, you know what? Let's go inside the mansion. Really? Yes, let's go. As I walked those two in the mansion to their grand entry, and by the way, if anybody ever does purchase the book, there's a map in the back too that shows you. You'll see it's the grand entry, but then if you go to the map, you'll see where that is in location to everything on the property. And walked inside, and we're standing there. I said, oh, this is the grand entry. And the one girl, Tanya, is like, oh my God, the woodwork. And she's just, look, it's so beautiful. The other girl's name was Krizza. And she stood there, and suddenly she goes, oh my God. And I go, she scared me. And I go, what? She goes, she holds out her arms, and she's got these goosebumps. She goes, don't you feel that? And I said, no, I don't. And Tanya says, do that to me, like I was doing a trick or something. And I said, no, I'm not doing anything. She's feeling that. I don't feel it. As we got further into the house, we went into what we call the murder room, and she was standing in there, and she goes, didn't you hear that? And I said, hear what? The little footsteps running up to me and then running away. And I looked at her, I said, do you have the gift? And she goes, I don't know. I mean, I saw my grandmother after she died. I went, well, there's a hint. So I said, okay, so you have the gift. That's why you're feeling these things, and we are not. We ended up walking through and going upstairs, and we passed this one door, and she looked and said, okay, I'm done. I said, okay. Let's go. And Tanya says, I don't want to leave. Let's go. I walked her outside and sat. She was shaking. I said, what happened? She looked in that room and she saw a little girl spirit peek around the corner at her and then dodge away and then look again. And she said, that's it. So that was probably Emily trying to connect with her because she had the gift. So good spirits and then some really bad spirits.
The place is obviously well protected, well guarded. Are there CCTV cameras throughout? Do you guys ever capture any strange footage of any of these anomalies? Not dust orbs or balls of light, but I mean, you know, figures, spectral figures or voices.
No, I mean there's a alarm system within the house, no cameras, and what I did do though at one point I went to IT in the city and said, I bought this, like, you know, almost like a nanny cam type thing. And I went to these guys who have zero sense of humor. And so they're kind of difficult to deal with sometimes because they just stare at you. So I went, hey, guys, is there any way that we could put this inside the mansion where I can, you know, get on a secured, whatever it is, like it's called a VPN. And I could get on that and look at it from my my apartment. And they're just staring at me. And they go, why? I said, for the ghost. And they go, seriously, why? I no, it's there are ghosts in this home and I just want to look at it. And I go, then they kind of blew it off. I left the camera with them. The one guy really dug the camera, got a hold of me 2 days later and said, hey, come on back. We're going to put you on the VPN. I went, cool, man. Okay. Went back. They got me all set up. I was able to put that camera on the second floor landing where a lot of activity happens, you know, shadows and apparitions and all that stuff. And I placed it there. And I had a night where I went into the houses by myself. And I looked at the portal area, and I had placed some, like a REM pod and a mag light, you know, just a mag light turn on and off, and a couple other things. And I said, Emily, I can't see you, but I know you're here. I know for a fact that you're here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave these things for you to play with, and I'll show you how to use them, and you can just play with them. And then I'll come get them tomorrow. This is just so you have a good, fun night, okay? I showed her how to use them, and I left. And I went home, and I got on my iPad, and I looked, and I went, oh, my God, the light's going on and off. So I got on through that camera. And there's like a delay to it. So if I say Emily from my apartment here in Santa Monica, then it takes a couple of seconds. Then it goes Emily inside the house. So I did that. And I said, Emily, turn it on one more time, please. Turn it on one more time, please. Boom, the light comes on. Now I'm not even in that mansion. This is like done from a site 10 miles away. And I said, thank you, honey. Could you turn that off for me, please? Light goes off. I was able to have a conversation with her from my place in Santa Monica through that camera and say, do you have friends in the house? I said, do you like Cleet? Light did not go on. And then, do you like Steve? Light goes on. So what are you going to do?
Well, at least she was honest with you. Right? You don't have to second guess what's happening. Very cool. Very strange stuff. Do you feel that the spirits have been instrumental in pushing you to write this book? Do you think they wanted their voices to be heard, their stories to be told?
I do think there is something with that. I mean, I literally, Dave, I prayed one night when I was getting ready. I didn't know I was going to retire. I retired because COVID came along and the city offered certain people handshakes to get them off the books. And I was like, really? Yeah, I'll take that. And so I said, I'll just use the time to finish up the book. But prior, just prior to that, I was laying in bed and I prayed and said, please show me what I'm supposed to do. What am I supposed to do with my time that's coming up ahead? And I literally woke up at 3 a.m, laid there, and this thought came to me out of the blue. Write your tour, because I used to give tours, not to the general public, just to people that either were friends of mine, came along and said, hey, could you bring us in there at night? Or somebody, like there was a family from Australia that happened to walk by and, oh my God, this is the greatest place. I'm, you know, talking about, because the film There Will Be Blood was shot there. Down in a boat, there's a bowling alley down there, and the end of that movie is shot at Greystone. And this guy was enamored with that. So I said, you know what? Come on, let's go. Took his whole family around. So I would do stuff like that. So I just thought, I'll write a book about the ghost stories, but I don't want it to be just about the ghost stories, one after another, after another. I want people to know about this family. I think to me that was the most important part of it, Dave, was that, yes, there are maids that killed themselves that are there for sure. And little Emily who died, but the family itself was a very prominent family in its day. And not a lot was known about that family because they were very private with all that money. You know, they had, that was during the time of the Lindbergh baby that was kidnapped and killed. And so they ended up hiring security for each one of their children. So there's five kids. Each one had one security guard that would follow them around all the time. And they hated it. And I even talked to Patrick when he was in his 80s. And he said, oh, my God, we just hate it. So what they would do is they go up in the attic and then they would go into the catwalks, which are incredible. And they would run and hide and the security couldn't find them. And they would flip out because like that's their job. But the kids would run in the catwalks up in the dark in the attic and hide. And then knowing that they couldn't find them, they thought that was really funny. So I wanted people to know that this was a family. This was an actual family that came there with all good intentions. And then everything turned, a lot of things turned bad. So I think to me, that was part of wanting not only to get the ghost stories out, because they are quite incredible. And maybe we'll talk about a couple of them, but they're really just like, you've got to be kidding me. But there was also a family that had lives there and just like us, just lived there and raised a family. It should be known about that as well.
Very cool. The book is out and available. We have a link for the book on today's program guide where you can buy it standard through our Amazon shop. Or if you want to get the autographed copy directly from the author, the link is there for that as well. Cleet, thank you so much for coming on and sharing the insights into Greystone. What a fantastic place with a rich history. And there's the tragedy of the spirits and the spirits that are there, but they are now being heard. And I'm hoping that this will help their story flesh out, and perhaps that'll give them the freedom they need then to move on.
Awesome. That'd be fantastic. Thank you, Dave.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you all for tuning in and being a part of the program with us. Remember to support the great guests that you hear on the show. Order their books. And then when you order the books, make sure you rate and review them on Amazon so that they get seen and heard. We'll be live tonight. Make sure you tune in on our Darkness Radio YouTube channel, Darkness Radio Facebook page, and Twitter page. You can watch the live video tonight, 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, as we talk about the djinn and dealing with this very strange phenomena, these beings. Are they ultra-dimensional? Are they alien? Are they ghosts? What exactly are there? Our guest, Cameron Pasha, will talk to us about that tonight on the best in paranormal talk radio. You'll hear it tomorrow right here as a podcast. Until next week, we'll be back. You've been listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. That's Tim. I'm Dave. This is Darkness Radio.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.